Corona constraints. As we all face the unprecedented challenges of a world constrained by the effects of the COVID-19 virus, how can we mitigate the effects of the pandemic? I offer a view shaped by the theory of constraints, TOC. The first step in a constraint analysis is to define the boundary of the system. In this case, I will focus on Australia and all the people within its borders. The second step is to determine the goal of that system. Fundamentally, in our case, it is the electorate who have the right to set the goal. In practical terms, we achieve this through the election of a majority of members to our federal and state parliaments based on their policy platform and competence, especially their ability to deal with what British Prime Minister Macmillan described as events, dear boy, events. In TOC terms, the goal too should have specific attributes. You should always be able to get more of it, and you should not state the goal as a target. Thus, we will achieve a budget surplus of X by 30th of June 20XX should be restated as we will achieve a budget surplus no less than X by no later than 30th of June 20XX. Furthermore, the goal should be simple and easy to articulate and serve the purpose of having everyone in the system recognize it, from the Prime Minister and Premiers to the most humble and vulnerable in our society. Crucially, we must understand the goal in the context that shows how it serves the higher order mission, vision, and purpose of the system we're examining, the Commonwealth of Australia. Importantly, a well-crafted goal allows the actions taken when executing the strategy to be measured. Thus, it's possible to assess whether or not those actions are effective and able to deliver more units of goal achievement. This goal definition for the fight against the coronavirus thus raises some interesting questions. How could it be framed? We've all become familiar with the idea of flattening the curve, that is, to slow down the rate of infection through enforcement of social distancing. This policy allows the health services to use the limited capacity they have to service all of those for whom COVID-19 effects have become acute. As I write, preparations are underway for 20% of the 8 million people in New South Wales to catch the virus. The forecast is that 5% of people affected, that's up to 80,000 people, would require intensive care. Australia as a whole, however, has only just more than 2,000 intensive care beds. That's quite some constraint. If the virus was allowed to run wild, without any mitigating actions, and vast swathes of the population contracted the disease at more or less the same time, that would be 40 people for every bed if New South Wales took all available Australian ICU beds. What chance is there that the rest of the states would accede to this proposition? If the goal is to save as many lives as possible, what are the decision-making criteria going to be for the triage? Who will be the lucky one, and how many of the remaining 39 will make it on their own? It appears that the younger you are, the less severe the symptoms. But for our large, old, and aging population, we're going to have to make some pretty tough, unpopular, and socially divisive decisions. 1 in 13 jobs in our economy comes from tourism and hospitality. International arrivals have ceased. Domestic travel is being heavily cut. Qantas and Virgin are under pressure and possibly will be for some time. Qantas has cut international capacity by 90% and domestic capacity by 60% until the end of May. How many of the 30,000 people who work for Qantas will still have a job in a couple of weeks? What happens to every small business owner who has a restaurant, a pub, or a cafe? What happens to all the commerce that stops as a consequence of millions of people having no more than the dole to see them through the crisis? In a recent essay, Victor Davis Hanson made the point about the USA, which faces similar issues to those we'll experience in Australia. Quote, "We sometimes forget, in legitimate fears of the coronavirus, that every action prompts a reaction and the massive curtailments of the US economy can have as many health consequences as the virus itself. If millions lose income and jobs, become depressed in self-isolation, increase smoking and drug and alcohol use, and postpone, out of fear, necessary buying and visits to doctors and hospitals for chronic and serious medical conditions unrelated to the virus." End quote. The truth is that no one knows how the pandemic will play out. In an excellent simulator contained in an article in the Washington Post, you can get some idea of what the four basic strategies are to minimize the effects of the pandemic: free-for-all, attempted quarantine, moderate social distancing, and extensive social distancing. These kinds of scenarios are what's exercising the minds of our finest epidemiologists, virologists, and public health policy officials. So, with all of that as context, my stab at articulating a utilitarian goal: minimize the adverse health, well-being, and economic consequences of the COVID-19 for the population of Australia and the benefit of the world. Given the above, we can conclude that our political leaders have to achieve a feat of creating national unity of purpose that is unprecedented outside of wartime. We're asking them to resolve the diabolical dilemma of minimizing the health outcomes of the virus while simultaneously ensuring that they do least harm to our economy. Allow me to step down from those lofty heights and provide some thoughts which go back to the roots of TOC. Below is a diagram of the five-step focus. Let's use it to see what TOC thinking can contribute to achieving the stated goal. Find the constraint. Currently, there are several candidates for the constraint, depending on the level of resolution you're taking. But the one that worries most people is the supply of ICU beds, and even more so, the availability of ventilators. Optimize the constraint. There are only two ways to optimize the constraint: either build more capacity or slow down the demand. Ways to build more capacity could include massively mobilizing projects and resources to create more ICU beds, ramping up the design and production of ventilators, insisting that the doctors, nurses, and other frontline health workers do only that which only they can do. Ways to slow down demand could include massively increasing the supply of test kits, optimizing the process of conducting the tests, for instance with drive-through testing, ramping up the throughput of pathology labs to deliver the results of the tests in record time, applying big data concepts, including AI, to help with an increase in knowledge about the COVID-19 epidemiology and virology, using IoT and mobile phone geolocation to identify who is infected and with whom they have come into contact, mobilizing manufacturing capacity to create vital goods, such as sanitizer from alcohol facilities or face masks and protective clothing, from those with expertise in the provision of those goods hazardous industrial and mining environments. Collaborate around the constraint. One of the most encouraging and heartwarming examples of collaboration I read about is the development of a Facebook group who volunteered to do domestic duties for families of doctors, nurses, and other frontline health workers. Others include maintaining social distance following best practice, not hoarding supplies, accelerating the capacity building of broadband so that it doesn't become the communications bottleneck, learning how to work productively and socialize from home, reading, learning, and growing, taking the time to reflect deeply on your life and how you can contribute in whatever way to positively moving the dial. This crisis is a singular opportunity to reconnect with all that is true, good, and beautiful. Dare to be that most generous, mindful, and compassionate person you could be. Uplift the constraint. This too shall pass. We know that, on the horizon, there will be a vaccine. To get to that place, we must encourage behaviours that include removing all waste from the conduct of clinical trials, including senseless bureaucracy, developing a portfolio of approaches to the creation of a vaccine to increase the possibility of finding one that works sooner, supporting collaborative efforts in promising places such as Australia, the USA, Israel and Canada, where there are encouraging signs of cures. Finally, start again. I am firmly of the view that the world we left so rudely just a couple of weeks ago will be a very different place once we are over the crisis. I was struck deeply by the fact that it was the nation states that responded to the crisis, not the supranational constructs of, for example, the European Union or the United Nations. In short order, every country closed its borders, and the World Health Organization played along with China's cover-up. One has to tap the deeper root of national memory, legends, and myths to find the source of resilience, unity, and sacrifice. Anzacs and the Diggers come to mind for me in Australia. I also think there's been an awakening, limitations of globalization, and the consequent need to diversify supply chains. For example, Australia has only 27 days of liquid fuel as a reserve, with 90% of refined fuel imported. What does this mean for us as we come to understand better what a totalitarian regime in China is capable of doing. Anyone want to put our whole economy at risk with the government that lied and covered up about the coronavirus and who makes imperial claims on our vital shipping lanes in the South China Sea? I'll leave it for now on another quote from Victor Davis Hanson, whose wisdom applied to his analysis of the United States is equally prescient for Australia. Quote, "In addition, it is not wrong to remind the public that current but once caricatured policies of secure borders, targeted travel bans, demands for transparency and symmetry from major US trading partners, recalibration with China, and return of manufacturing and assembly of key US industries, from high technology to pharmaceuticals, was long overdue, and must continue to ensure US security and the long-term health of its people. There will be enormous opportunity to prosper in that world of the future, so let's be sure, each of us in our way, to make our contribution and do our duty."